Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rated G Radio. We have a fun show today. In just a couple of moments, we're going to have Justin Mokiha Asar join the show, and we just phonetically did it right before the show started, so Justin, I hope I did that right, but I'll bring you on in just a second. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Big, big thanks. Yesterday, on yesterday's show, we had Annie Ulrich on, and I didn't get a chance to visit with you guys about some of the things that have been going on, but I had the chance to go film a French reality TV show yesterday up in Hollywood with Kitten K. Sarah, and we filmed a doggy birthday party, believe it or not. And if you're friends with me on Facebook, you can see pictures of the said party there, and it will be airing in France sometime, I'm thinking in the next month or two. Craziest thing I think I've done in a million years, but I took Eric up and dressed him in a little doggy tuxedo and hung out with eight housewives that brought at least one or two dogs with them, and we had a doggy birthday party, believe it or not, and they had film cameras and everything. And today we had the opportunity to go down to Orange County, California, down here in the Huntington Beach area, and I had lunch with Stephen Fales, who's the star of Confessions of a Mormon Boy, and he will be on tomorrow's show as a VIP special guest star, but we recorded the interview today, and we'll talk about that as well. But that's yesterday, and that's today, and tomorrow, but right now, the most important thing that we're going to do is introduce our VIP special guest star tonight, Justin Mokiha. Sorry, Justin, did I do it correctly that time?
That was pretty good, Gary. That's, what, your seventh or eighth go at it? You're getting better and better every time.
Yeah, but by the end of the show, I might even actually be close. Thank you for being here on the show. And I need to also thank Mary Lou for connecting us up and introducing us. She's one of the most fascinating people I know, and she's connected to everybody in Australia who is cool and hip, and that's you. And she says you have to have Justin on the show because he's got this cool thing you have to know about. And here you are. So thanks for being here today. It's Wednesday in Australia. What's the weather like where you're at?
The weather is beautiful where I am on the Gold Coast here. We've got a little bit of a swell running. There's not enough yet. We've actually got a big surfing competition in town. So they're waiting. They're on hold for the big swell, which is supposed to hit on Friday. But, it's looking all right. You're pretty lucky to have me on here.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to have you here instead of out catching the waves today. So you do so many things. Can you tell the listeners kind of like a brief overview about who you are and all of that fun stuff, but then let's get to liquid crystals because that's what we're really here to talk about. But you do so much more than just talking about that product tonight.
Absolutely. And I think, I could talk about myself for hours too. I think most people can. It wouldn't be very interesting, but it would be entertaining. The liquid crystal show, it's an aspect of the work that I do, or it's a principle of it. I guess if you looked at me or you had no idea who I was, I think probably the first thing to know is I grew up in Vanuatu in the islands. Much of what I do is related to that. Everything is very, very island-based, I guess you could say. I'm very close to nature more than anything. If you follow me on Facebook or anything like that, you'll constantly see posts about surfing, about nature, about anything like that. If it's natural, I'll look at it and I'll have a play around with it. My fascination with magic, with, you know, anything spiritual, anything that can change someone's lives and make the world a better place, started at a very young age. I was actually born realized, which is a term very often thrown around, but I guess the simple version of that is when someone is born and they're shown aspects of who they have been and given certain rules and regulations as to what they're going to achieve in this lifetime. So in some ways, this life for me has been written. There's aspects of it that I guess things that I'm allowed to do, things that I shouldn't do, things that I should do. I've been clever and done most of the things that I shouldn't do, which makes for an interesting life. And I guess one of the most entertaining aspects of that is the liquid crystals, which, started off as a tiny little dream, just a very, very simple thing. And when I say a dream, literally a dream, where I had a small girl sort of sitting in a dream state with me, and she had a beautiful bowl, sitting in front of her. and she's spinning her finger in this bowl, you know, but it looked like the night sky, you know, her just moving her finger through this substance. And I said, look, what are you doing, you know? And she said, oh, this is a liquid crystal. And she looked at me and she said, but you know that, don't you? And I said, no, I haven't got a clue about that. And she said, well, it's time you started learning because it's here, what you're here to do. So I spent,
wow.
I think, from that day onwards, probably, I think I probably spent about 12 years trying to actually work out how to actually make a crystal into a liquid. And it was about, what that would probably be about, I think about 1989, somewhere around there. And eventually, after about 12 years of trying to do that, and through that time, I became a naturopath. I studied natural medicine, chiropractics, physio. I did a lot of basic medicine stuff. And when you study that sort of stuff, you keep seeing the gaps that are in it. You know, there's just pieces missing of the puzzle the whole time. And being as close to nature as I am, I knew that if something really was effective as a form of medicine and could really help people, that it actually had to be whole. It couldn't have, you know, division in it. It couldn't have bits and pieces that didn't relate, you know. And I think one of the things that really opened my eyes was I was studying herbal medicine at the time. And, you know, you've probably heard of a wonderful herb called echinacea. And
sure.
Echinacea is used, you know, most often echinacea is used anyway as an immune supplement. You know, we sort of all throw it in tablets and take it as supplements to increase our immunity and fight off viral infections and things like that. Well, it became apparent to me, you know, doing this in Australia, that echinacea in Australia as a herbal medicine is brought over from different origins. You know, we have it from the US. We have echinacea from China, from Indonesia. We have echinacea that's grown here in Australia as well. You know, when you see those different origins, what I started to realize was that the echinacea actually did different things. And I realized, for example, when I gave someone echinacea from the US, it tended to treat the throat region of that person. It was good in their upper chest, but it did nothing anywhere else in the body. The stuff from China, you know, seemed to work on the digestive system. And I started to wonder, you know, why that was happening when, you know, we've got this idea that you've got a plant, it's the same everywhere it grows, why is it different, you know? And I related that to a person, whereby if you've got a person, you've grown up a certain way, you've become accustomed to certain things, you change and you become someone different based on that. So I sort of thought, well, a plant's not much unlike a person. It's incredible that in you know, a medicine as vast and as big as something that's herbal medicine, that people have never actually worked out. We've never looked into it and said, right, well, what is echinacea going to do from China or from the States or from Australia, and why are they different? And I actually started to realize that was a flaw in herbal medicine, because there's no holistic herb that we actually work from. And for me, as I said to you, in nature, we need to understand everything has to be whole, you know? And it was that holism that sort of tore apart everything that I tried to put together with the liquid crystals. Every single time I did it, I sort of, you know, I could, for example, look at amethyst from Brazil. And amethyst from Brazil is a really deep purple color. In fact, if you hold it up outside, it's even got reds and oranges through it. It's so deep in its purple. If you get a piece of amethyst from, let's say, Mexico, it's got such a very, very, very light lilac color through it. It's almost clear. You can see almost straight through it.
Hmm.
And I started to realize in the mineral kingdom, they're exactly the same. You know, it's exactly the same as a herb. So the very first thing to do to make a liquid crystal for me was to make them holistic. And that's a very big journey, because effectively what it meant was we needed to source pieces, for example, of amethyst from every source point where it presents itself on the earth. And if we could do that and bring them all together, we'd have a holistic or a whole representation of that actual crystal. And that would be the first time that that crystal had been made whole here on the earth since Atlantean times. Now, I use the term Atlantis, and I talk about Atlantis, and for me, there's a very big misunderstanding as to what that is in the world and the way it works. For me, it's just an ancient history or a parallel Earth to what we are, and I don't really want to go into that today because we don't really have enough time to do it. However, I do believe there was a time where our planet was more whole and closer to unity than what it is today, and that for certain reasons that, if you like, that unity was taken away from us, and we're gradually building back to that oneness principle in consciousness. One of the aspects of working with crystals or minerals that really interests me is the fact that they are minerals and that they are made up of the elements, and so are we. You know, we are quite literally a liquid crystal. We are composed of water with minerals dissolved in it. And when you start to look at that, you know, our relationship to the earth, you know, and even if you look into the Bible or other religions, and man is actually made from the earth or made from mud, you know, you start to understand the connotation that we're looking at. And for me, I wanted to understand, I guess, the in-depth version of why we and the earth are supposed to be one, you know. And I guess I've been taught that from a very, very young age growing up in the islands and, you know, torn between two principal understandings of learning magic and playing around with things that perhaps I shouldn't have, and, you know, getting a lot of guidance on that too, which probably I also shouldn't have been given. And also being, you know, taken to every church and every religion and being guided on those principles as well. And two sides developed in me. And very, very quickly I found myself being able to talk to iconic religious figures, beings that, you know, were either physically incarnate or not. I found myself sitting at the feet of very spiritual men and women around the world who were educating me deliberately and sometimes, you know, without even choice. I was sort of forced into these scenarios, you know, we'd go on a holiday and Justin gets dropped off at the local monastery and picked up a week later. You know, it seems like that where, you know, I thought I was having a holiday turned into work. So at the end of the day, what sort of developed in me was, I guess, an understanding of the earth and an understanding of spirit that sort of evolved side by side and then dissolved each other, you know. And in that, I also understood the nature of the body as a very grounded instrument, and the nature of the spirit as a very, I guess, holistic version of love and the aspect of spirit that filters through us. So the liquid crystals, I guess, is a merging of an understanding spiritually that there has to be a oneness or a wholeness that we're seeking. And I guess where that merges with the body and the body itself becomes the instrument of that unity. If you look at all things, you know, any spiritual system out there in the world, everyone's telling you to become one, to unite, to come together, you know, to really find the real power of self. And that real power of self is not outside, it's actually within. And again, you know, all these spiritual principles are constantly telling us to go within. And my question always was, well, go within what? Where am I going to go? And what do I have to activate? What do I have to grab hold of that makes it real, you know? And I wanted to provide the world with a method of actually creating a wholeness that, you know, would sort of almost like a jigsaw puzzle sort of come together. And, you know, all the way through the journey, I was sort of throwing little bits and pieces, just little things that would sort of say, you know, have a look at this, or turn this page in the book, or go to this place and do this or do that. And some of the more profound ones, you know, were so simple in their nature, you know, but yet they changed my whole way of thinking around what it was I wanted to give to the world. And what I really wanted to give to the world was themselves, you know, and that became a, which sounds really silly when you say it, but it was the fundamental principle that I based the modality on that is now the liquid crystals. It was always supposed to be a gift for everyone to give to themselves rather than for me to ever give to anyone, you know, and we've adhered to that through its creation process, you know, and I think what the liquid crystals has evolved into, you know, is due to those little tiny messages that I sort of got pushed around by for 12 or so years up until I really received what was the gift of being able to do that, which became the liquid crystals. One of those particular pushes was the understanding that in order to create holism, which I described before when I used the echinacea example, the only way that we could actually let that happen was if we, for one, knew the individual parts, the parts that they'd been separated into. And I'd been very, very schooled in the tarot and in many different forms of I guess, for the want of a better word, we could say magic or the laws of man's mind, so to speak. And I sat back one day and I got a very clear message that, you know, what you will create is already created and the earth has given it to you, you know. And I was so confused by that for so many, you know, so long. I sat there and I turned it over and turned it over. And the biggest question I had about creating or trying to help the earth create a gift that would return humanity to unity was, if that's the case and it's already in nature, then what the hell am I supposed to do? You know, why do you need me? And the answer became really, really clear when I recognized that separation effect that had been, you know, made evident, that amethyst was found in all of these places. Now, to give you a bit of an example, clear quartz at the moment on the earth is found in 16,854 different origins.
Wow.
So in order to unite clear quartz, we need one piece from every single one of those origins, and we need to bring it to one spot. Now, again, it sounds doable at that stage, and it was doable at the start. You know, we looked at it, and I sort of thought, look, I can do this. I was given a very big collection of crystals, which is part of a institution that I'm involved with in my spiritual growth. And that formed the base for a massive collection, or if you like, a massive blueprint of work. And those crystals were eventually done. The question for me was always, if this has got to happen, how many of these things do I have to do? You know, because when do I start and when do I finish? And the crystals were the first thing. You get the stones together, then we'll tell you what to do with them. So getting the stones together took sort of about 12 years to accomplish. And a lot of money, a lot of effort, a hell of a lot of patience. You know, if you've got a piece of, I never forget, there's a sapphire that was involved in this that we actually have to borrow off a sheik. And he kept saying to me, you can have it for 5 days, you know. And I'd say, well, 5 days is great, but can I tell you the 5 days that I need it, you know? And he'd say, you can have it now. And I think, but I don't have the other pieces, you know. And then it'd be one piece of sapphire that we're missing from one place on the earth, you know.
Oh.
And you couldn't complete the process without that. And sapphire wasn't a big problem because there wasn't as many origins as clear quartz, but it was always a very, very big process. In the end, it was shown to me there'd be 77 of these stones that needed to be reunited. But the most amazing thing took place probably about 3 years after that, and I'll jump ahead, and that was that although I knew there were 77 stones, the criteria for those to be chosen was that the earth had to be able to present them herself without any interference from man. We couldn't mine for them. We couldn't dig a hole and tear them from her. That they actually had to be literally given to man. So they had to arise to the surface. Now, when I knew that rule and I actually adhered to it, there are only 77 crystals that actually present themselves naturally to human beings. And those 77 crystals then became the crystals that we'd use for the liquid crystals. The interesting thing that took place 3 years later or so was that I also realized that if, you know, as a nutritionist and a naturopath, I realized that if I took those 77 stones and I broke them down into their elemental components, so broke them down into actual minerals and then passed that again, those 77 stones, if put in a single sequence, actually were the same minerals and roughly the same composition as the human being. So
really?
The interesting thing was that those 77 stones are already inside someone. You know, they're just waiting to be awoken. So you can imagine when that actually happened. I mean, I'll never forget the day that I actually sat there and I thought, wow, you know, these 77 stones are these minerals. And, you know, I'm very logical. You know, it's unusual, I guess, for someone, you know, that works spiritually and does this sort of stuff to be as logical as me. You know, I would never give something to someone unless I've done it myself. I am not someone to just sort of say, okay, yeah, well, let's just roll with that and see what happens. I need to know why something will work, you know. So although the earth and every bit of guidance that I had around me was saying these are the 77 stones, the but why sort of really it hung over my head for probably about 3 years, you know, why I sort of sat there and sort of thought, wow, you know, how can this be that there's 77 stones? And particularly because I'd been schooled with the tarot and I'd been involved in a lot of magical systems and other things, 77 was a really odd number. You know, the teachers I had around me at the time, you know, I never forget the fits of hysteria that they went into. They thought it was the funniest thing that had ever happened. When I got to 70, they were still happy. I got to 71, they were still happy, you know. I got to 72, and they all sort of smiled and thought, right, well, this is where it all should end, you know. And then I got to 73, you know, and once I got to 73, I was, you know, there was fits of laughter all around me whenever I told anyone that I was up to 73, 74, 75. When I got to 77, everyone thought that I'd really lost it, you know, and to tell you the truth, so did I. You know, yeah. 77 doesn't divide into anything, you know, it's spiritually, it's a very difficult number to work with. It doesn't divide well into any of the other spiritual disciplines. You know, and I sort of thought, wow, you know, what have I done here? This goes against everything I've ever been educated in, anything that I've ever known, you know. But I knew it was right, you know. And I eventually found where that fits. And the 77 actually fits perfectly, because if you take the 77 and you divide it by 11, you end up with 7 crystals for each sphere on the tree of life, if you incorporate the secret, or if you like, the 11th sphere on the tree of life. And, you know, the 11th sphere on the tree of life, which is basically called Da, spelt D-A-A-T-H, and cleverly it was hidden by magical, I guess, purpose a long time ago and called that, so everyone thought it was death and just stayed the hell away from it. It was called that principally because it's a gateway. It's not really here in the world. And the tree of life actually is a representation of the most grounded physical self and everything we have to attain. And it maps itself through emotions and mind and soul all the way back up to our divinity right up the top of the tree. And I started to see that the liquid crystals, basically what I've been given, was a map of a human being from their most physical components all the way through their feeling, thinking state to their soul and all the way back to the most, I guess, the most revered and most beautiful part of themselves, that divine oneness at the top. You know, once the goddess and God self unite to form that, or the Holy Trinity, if you wanted to call it that. And not only that, but was given seven exact crystals to allow each part of that, if you like, 11-part journey to actually be completed. And I sort of looked upon it and went, wow, you know, this is a really big thing. And when I had that realization many years ago, you know, that was when I got out of bed one morning and I, in my crude, normal way of doing things, which is all or nothing, I had a message just before I opened my eyes, you know, you need to go to Tibet and you need to go now, get to Tibet. And, you know, I had no idea where I was going over there. I'd been a professional surfer for many years and had done a lot of travel and had pretty much used Rip Curl and a few other sponsors to educate me around different spiritual disciplines. You know, when my friends were going out and drinking beer and doing things that young people do, I was going to monasteries and meditating and doing things. And
wow.
Still to this day, I would thank Rip Curl for my spiritual education, which was very clever. But it's a way, I guess, a means to an end, you know. And by doing that, I that morning packed a toothbrush and I think 2 pairs of underpants, walked out the door and took off to Tibet. And when I landed there, or close to there, I just literally just listened. And I ended up in a monastery, which, you know, I can now talk about a little bit, which was near Mount Kailash. And I was presented with a ruby there by 2 monks, and the ruby was wrapped in black and red silk and handed to me. They just smiled and said, apparently you know what to do with this. And I looked at them and thought, well, I've got about 1,000 questions. And as I started to ask them, they sort of walked off, you know, exit stage left type style.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, that's wonderful, you know. So I returned back to Australia with this rock, thinking that's just great. All I needed, another crystal, you know. And it slowly, the ruby itself revealed itself to me, and she revealed her name as the Star of Gabara. And she then unlocked the liquid crystals. She actually showed me how to let the earth make them, how to allow them to occur. And it was a very, very big thing. You know, the first crystal, in fact, that was made, you know, and reunited as a liquid crystal was actually a stone called hemimorphite, which, again, you know, for some strange reason, it's one of those stones that sort of slips through. You know, not a lot of people know it. You know, it should really sit on the shelf with clear quartz and amethyst and rose quartz as one of the most popular stones for humanity, and it just slips through. But hemimorphite was the very first crystal, you know, which I still take as a bit of personal abuse because, of course, hemimorphite is the crystal of the egoless state. So obviously I was still carrying around a little bit of that, and I needed a bit of a clip around the ear. So that was the very first liquid crystal was, you know, the one for the egoless state. We put that together, and that was, 15 years ago when that was created. And I think, which is very timely, I think it was about 6 weeks ago now, the very first big mother bottle, so the original bottle that we actually made as the hemimorphite original one, it actually ran out, which for me was a really important indicator. You know, I'd been waiting for that to occur so that we could present the modality to the rest of the world. And it just, you know, it's the way life works. You know, you sort of let things evolve, and if you're patient and just wait, these things happen, you know. But I have to say, I was sort of jumping up and down a little bit, waiting for the last few drops to be purchased or to leave the office, just so that I could close the door on that aspect of it, you know. But it's been a really, really long journey to have those things come together. But, you know, that's pretty much, you know, that's as quick as I could sort of throw it together. As I said to you, you know, before, you know, I could talk about the liquid crystals and their creation for days. You know, it's a fascinating aspect of the work. They are unlike any other thing. You know, a lot of people say to me, are they a crystal essence? You know, and no, they're not, because you know, what I came up against as I was trying to make essences of crystals and things like that, is that you can make a flower essence, a tree essence, you know, anything that's got a carbon base, you can make an essence. And the reason for that is very simple and something that everyone will understand. And that is that in the process of making an essence, you take, a flower and you float it in water and expose it to sunlight. Now, a flower loves sunlight to start with. It's where, you know, what makes it grow. It gives it its color and its beauty and all the rest of it. Crystals don't like sunlight. They don't know sunlight. They live under the ground where it's dark and moist and cold. You know, when you put a crystal like clear quartz, and this is an important message for all your listeners, Garrett, clear quartz itself, you know, and you could ask a scientist, you can ask anyone you like about this, but if we take crystal clear quartz and put it on a windowsill, it actually reverses its charge. When it's exposed to sunlight, it actually has a really bad effect on the crystal. So a crystal like clear quartz that sends light out from itself in all directions, when exposed to sunlight for a long period of time, actually draws light to it and takes light out of an environment. So to all those listeners out there that have got crystals sitting on windowsills and doing things like that, it's important you understand crystals live in the dark. They exist in that space. And even science today can prove that when a mineral like that is exposed to sunlight, it reverses its polarity. So we've got to be very mindful just of how little we know about them. Anyway, I digress. I'll just jump back to the essence. When you're making an essence like that and you've floated your flower in water, exposed it to sunlight, the sunlight actually sloughs. It basically allows, if you like, the flower to release small amounts of carbon into the water. And when that happens, that carbon becomes almost like a physical body. The other thing that happens is because the flower's energy and it's, if you like, its aura is present, the carbon retains a small part of that aura. And what you then get is when you remove the flower, the actual flower from the water, you get water with sloughed carbon in it with energy clinging to those particles of carbon. So the essence is still there. The vibration stays. However, you know, and that can stay there indefinitely. If it's taken care of and brandy is added to it as a preservative or any other alcohol, for that means it can hold its vibration indefinitely. However, if you try and do that with clear quartz, with other minerals that are silicon-based, they don't slough. They don't actually put anything into the water physically. You know, they will put their vibration into the water. The water will attempt to hold on to that vibration, but if it doesn't have a physical body, it's the same as us when we pass away. When the physical body dies, the spirit leaves. So when you put a crystal into water, and expose it to sunlight. Now, if you do that for a short period of time, the energy around a crystal is magnified. The water will pick up that vibration and it will hang on to it for as long as it possibly can. With most crystals, that period of time of holding on to the vibration is generally about 7 days. And that's a really, really good sort of length of time. After that, it's a little bit like an aura without a physical body. It fades from the water and it leaves. And that was probably the greatest problem we have with the liquid crystals. Every single time I made one of these things, the vibration just wouldn't stay there. You know, it would actually leave after a week. And then when I got good at it, maybe 2 weeks, you know, and I thought, this is no good. You know, I need something that is a crystal but is a liquid. It generates its own light. It doesn't do anything else. And we found the answer to that, you know, after mucking around with it for a long time. I realized the answer was sacred geometry. And I wasn't being taught or shown how to make an essence. I was actually being taught and shown how to actually make a crystal. And what we were looking to do was create a liquid that instead of actually having a vibration and, you know, actually having the crystal in the liquid or anything like that, all we needed to do was replicate the crystal's inner structure. And by doing so, when it's actually exposed to an environment that has life, that environment that has life creates the crystal. So still to this day, a liquid crystal has no vibration whatsoever. And it confuses so many people, you know, because they call us a vibrational therapy. But we're not really. You know, a liquid crystal is a substance that when placed within the body allows the body to create a vibration. And that's very, very different to anything else in the world today. The reason and the way that works is principally inside our bodies, we have all the minerals that actually build the liquid crystal. So if you were, for example, to walk over and pick up a piece of amethyst off a counter in a shop, the moment you do that, your body recognizes not just the energy of that crystal, but it begins to draw all of the parts that make up that crystal in your blood to that part of your body. Once it does that, it can replicate itself, and your body actually takes on, your blood and everything within you takes on the geometry of the crystal that you're touching. And that's also why, you know, some of us get the travel bug. We wake up one day and we say, right, I have to go to Hawaii. I just have to do it. And we really are still coming to terms with why we do that. We think it's about, you know, going there and experiencing the culture, experiencing the people, doing things. Sure it is. But what if it's just so that you can stand on the earth where peridot is created under your feet? What if it's just so you can be close to the minerals that are singing their song so that your body can hear that song and begin to sing it itself? See, we all get stuck with little things in our life. And when we hit a brick wall and we can't go through it anymore, what we have to learn to do is adjust our frequency. And the only way we can adjust our frequency is by adjusting the substance that creates that frequency. And that substance is our physical form. So we can adjust our world around us as much as we like, you know, but in all reality, the whole thing is just an illusion until we're willing to look within ourselves and change ourselves. So I guess what I'm saying to you, Garrett, is that if you take a liquid crystal, what actually occurs is you change your inner environment to replicate or to look like the crystal in frequency and in geometry. You broadcast that into your auric space as a being, and by doing so, you repel or attract different scenarios to make your life better, and sometimes worse if you need to walk a path to actually find the truth or find bigger growth. But in most cases, people's lives change very dramatically when they're actually allowed to exist as a single frequency. You know, as anyone can tell you, you know, we walk around the world and are bombarded with, you know, not just every single person we pass, but every tree, every plant, every flower, every blade of grass sings a song to us. And we are so much so just lost in all of these beautiful songs that are happening around us. To pick one particular song that's relevant to us and allow ourselves to just drink of that and become whole is a really, really difficult thing to do. You know, and for anyone that's tried mindfulness meditation or silencing the mind, you know, where you say, right mind, silence, you know, and you say silence, 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 think about nothing, and then you realize that thinking about nothing is actually doing something, so you've actually forgotten to think about nothing in the first place. And the whole thing goes around, you know. A liquid crystal allows you to actually just hear one song, And it does it by actually replicating that song and letting it, I guess, resonate from within you instead of around you. And that was my goal, was to try and create something that's holistic so that, you know, if I give you amethyst, I know it's going to be relevant for you. And I know you can't get liquid crystal amethyst from the earth, because in order to do it, you would need, you know, to have over 11,000 pieces of amethyst and be able to touch them and be close to them all at once. So although it sounds incredibly complex, for me it's very, very simple. And for practitioners of the liquid crystals, when they start to, I guess, if someone was to walk in off the street and say, what's a liquid crystal? My answer is something that lets you know God. It's something that actually gets you one step closer to wholeness. And as this thing has developed, you know, over 15 years, you know, because a lot of people think it's a new modality. They sort of say, wow, you know, I've never heard of liquid crystals. And I think, well, that's the way it's supposed to happen. You know, it was born in Australia because we are effectively the sacral chakra of the world. And our energy in Australia is the energy of birth and renewal. And I never wanted the liquid crystals to go anywhere until I knew it had been born, until I knew that it was a tree that was stable and solid, because the very first thing that people want to do is chop it down. You know, unfortunately, that's the world we live in, and that you've got to expect those things. So we built a very clear and very precise tree now, and now it's ready for the rest of the world to really enjoy it. And although we send a lot of stuff, you know, to every country in the world, you know, it was just funny. In fact, we just sent a really big order to Pakistan this morning, you know, and I had this vision, you know, thinking to myself, I wonder what they've ordered, you know, and the girl from the office said, oh, you should see this order going to Pakistan. And I thought to myself, I bet it's sapphire, ruby, and all the crystals that come from Pakistan, you know, and there's so many beautiful pieces. Some of the most beautiful topaz in the world comes from Pakistan. And, of course, every single crystal they'd ordered were the crystals that come from Pakistan and actually come out of the earth there, you know. And I thought, well, this is part of a healing process for them, you know, getting this back there in its whole form rather than its separation. And, you know, you might notice I go back to that a lot, like I keep sort of saying to you, that wholeness is very important. It's important because as a race now, what they're trying to do is unite with each other. And it's a huge, very, very big thing when you start to see how this sort of rolls into itself, you know. And I, you know, as I said, I could talk about it forever. It's one of those things that I think people either understand or they don't. And I wish sometimes that I could remove the spirituality from the modality and I could sort of say to someone, look, this is going to help your headache. Just take it, you know, because whenever you sort of you talk about the spiritual aspects of the liquid crystals, you lose some people. Some people think, oh, well, it's too spiritual for me. I can't do that. You know, I'm not going to involve myself. And I sort of think, wow, you know, so you don't want to know who you are. I don't understand it. And for me, that's probably the last real thing to overcome with people. You know, I wish everyone could sort of have an interest in what's within them rather than what's around them, you know. So many people are just so lost in the grand idea of, you know, how am I going to buy my next car, that they miss the beauty of, you know, the snowflake that's falling in front of them, or the drop of rain, or the dew on the grass. You know, it's always fascinated me how people just don't see these things. You know, I can stand for hours and watch in awe as ants follow each other in a single line and know how to do that and all know their role. But yet, as human beings, five of us can't get our act together to do one thing at the same time and even meet each other for coffee. You know, and you just think, wow, how does that happen? How do we get so lost? Incredible.
We have a question or two from the listeners in the Blog Talk chat room tonight. Ask a question or throw this out? And this kind of goes, I don't think we're quite this depth in the conversation, but I want to make sure to ask the question for Leora, who's asking. She says, can you please expand on the significance of sequencing and crystal healing? And that just seems to call out tonight, so there's your question, Justin. Sure. Thanks, Leora.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And again, this is something that you know, after working with the stones in great depth and doing what we do, you know, and recognizing that a crystal is, you know, a sequence of geometries, it's a set of shapes, you know, that are ordered and organized, you know, And when that happens, you know, and you have form, form generates light and generates vibration. So we've got this idea, you know, and this idea of crystal healing sort of presented to us, where we can put stones on someone's body and shit happens, you know, things change. And we all sort of grabbed hold of that and we thought, right, well, spiritual healing is one thing, crystal healing is another. If we get, you know, 20 stones and we position them correct colors over correct areas of the body, things are going to happen. Now, I bought into that too a long time ago, you know, and I had, you know, I could put someone on a table and put it well over 180 stones on a person in a session. It'd take about an hour and a half to do. And I was very lucky, probably, I guess, probably my greatest gift is my sight. I have very, very good clairvoyance. I see incredibly well. I see someone's aura just as well as I see them, you know. In fact, I learned to control it in the main street of Vanuatu, running down the street, pretending and trying to work out who was real and who wasn't. And, you know, there was a really, really good idea to run straight at people and see if you go through them or don't go through them. However, once I got to about crutch height, I realized it wasn't such a great exercise. That, you know, I was running straight into people that were there, straight into people that weren't. But still to this day, you know, if I was to stand in a busy place, it's still very hard for me to know who's real and who isn't. So wow. With that sight, when I would put all of these stones on a person, you know, they would actually, I guess the only way to explain it, they would actually activate in a sequence. They don't all activate in light at once. And it's like the stones knew what they were doing. They had this hidden agenda that they were going to work with, you know. And the interesting thing was that although I might, you know, I certainly did the same layout sometimes on different patients, what I would actually see is the stones would actually initiate their own sequencing. They would choose when to activate and where for a person. And once they'd activated, I'd realize they wouldn't reactivate. They'd turn on and they'd turn off. Some of them would just pulse, you know, and most of the pulsing stones are more grounded stones. Things like garnet, Boji stone, which is a really popular stone out of the United States, hematite, pyrite, some of the real heavy stones that have got a lot of iron in them, they actually have like a pulse rate. And it's really interesting, those stones actually adjust the pulse of your patient if they're worked with properly. But those stones are the only ones, the ones with a heavy iron component, that actually turn on and off and continue to do that the whole way through a treatment. But in the liquid crystals, we encourage people to actually sequence their remedies. We prescribe them something called a trinity, and a trinity is basically a triplet of stones or three particular stones that work 1, 2, 3 and are actually taken in that order over 21 days. So you take crystal 1 on day 1, crystal 2 day 2, crystal 3 day 3. That forms a sequence of geometry that one crystal can't achieve, because one crystal is just one third of the equation. The second crystal creates the second third, and the third crystal obviously the third third, so to speak. And if you actually tailor those remedies together, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and you do it 7 times, each ray of creation is actually given its ability to manifest inside a human being. And what manifests on day 22 of that sequence, because you've done 3 7 times, on day 22, the rays of creation become active, the chakras light up inside a person, and that person becomes a crystal unknown here on Earth, but is a replica, I guess, of all three crystals activated at once. If you like, an elongated sequence of geometry where the three crystals work off each other, remembering that when we show people how to put those triplets of crystals together, the crystal 1 is usually an activation, an opening crystal. Crystal 2 is usually a healing crystal. It's a processing stone. And then crystal 3 is usually an outcome crystal. And the outcome crystal is kind of interesting, because what we look to do with that one is it usually has a little bit more of a higher vibration than the other two stones, so that when someone actually works 1, 2, 3 and they get to the third crystal, the body system is actually lifted to a slightly higher frequency. So whatever the ailment that we're actually treating, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, the body is now at a higher vibration and the condition can't actually reoccur. So in some ways, the third crystal, it stops that reoccurrence process and doing that. When we find, and that's just, you know, under will sequencing, choosing sequences like that, and we teach that in the level 1 courses, how people can I guess, let the crystals do that. And in the oracle, the liquid crystal oracle, or the book and cards that come with the modality, which I wrote, you find in there, I give you a lot of sequences, a lot of triplets of crystals. You know, I think there's over 150 different sequences in there that have different outcomes. Those outcomes are not achievable any other way. So if I was to get the three crystals and actually just hold them in my hands, I'm still not going to get the same result as putting those stones in a set sequence. So, you know, and a lot of people that don't know the work or aren't familiar with it to a great level won't know that when you actually read the liquid crystal oracle, it's kind of a work of art in a way. You know, I hide a lot of stuff. There's a lot of hidden messages in that book, you know, and when the publisher first laid eyes on it, they just went, wow, what are we going to do about this? You know, it's supposed to be a tiny little guidebook that slips into the cards. And, you know, it's actually a novel all by itself, you know. And they kind of freaked out and went, whoa, you know, what are we going to do? You know, and they freaked out, first of all, when they realized there were 77 cards. You know, well, nobody has 77 cards, you know. And I'm thinking, oh, well, I do, you know. And then, wow, there's this book, you know, and it's massive too. But that's got the crystals, you know, in there. The trinities, when they're written in the book, they're in sequence. So if I, for example, tell you the sequence of the Eye of Ra, and it's got three crystals, one, two, three, and I list them, the order that I list them in is one, two, three. If you change that order, it's something completely different. So, you know, that's sequencing in there. That's trinities in there. Mm.
Okay, so now I'm going to be selfish and ask a question here, Justin. You said before our time today that if I gave you my name, you could, and date of birth and all that other fun stuff, you could do some type of report off of your website at theliquidcrystals.com. What is that about? Because I kind of was poking around myself, but I just would really love an explanation from you on what that will give somebody if they go to your site today.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, look, what we've done in there is the crystals themselves, similar to the sequencing that we've just talked about, if I take the 77 crystals and I actually sit with them, they actually form a cycle of frequency that repeats on itself, a little bit like a spiral, where they go round in frequency, generally increasing in frequency, and then they decrease again. So the crystals actually form, I guess, a 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way to 77. Now, if we start at 77 and we run down to 1, we're actually literally starting at the bottom of the tree of life and working our way up all the way to sphere 1 at the top of the tree. So what it means is that the crystals effectively are bigger numbers, or of, I guess, higher numbers in the sequence, are more physical, and the ones of lower numbers are actually more spiritual. Now, although that means nothing to you whatsoever, that's actually how the tools on our website work. They actually read off the biorhythms of the planet based on your birth date, based on your name, and your name is very, very important because it's the sound that you're known by in the universe at this time in this body. And it's also the sound that you hear more than any other sound around you. You know, now, I like a lot of people, you know, of course, we get called different things by different people. You know, some of them we don't like to repeat, of course. I've got lots of those. But most of them that we sort of get called mean something, you know. And the thing that they mean, basically, if you've got someone, for example, my mother calls me Jar. Okay, now she calls me Jar because she doesn't want to call me Justin. Because if I do something wrong, she needs to reserve Justin, and it's got more kick that way. But everyone around me calls me something different, you know, and we all have our loved ones and people around us that call us different things. Well, those people are doing that for a reason, and usually it's a selfish reason. You know, we're harder to deal with. I'm a lot harder to deal with when you call me Justin. If you call me Jar or Juzzy, as my partner does, you know, and she's elaborated that to Stain now, because apparently just Stain becomes Stain. I can't believe I got away with all those years of surfing and wasn't known as the Stain. So I'm very thankful for that. However, all of these words, all of these names break down to a different frequency. That frequency becomes geometric, and that geometry becomes crystalline. So when we look at sound, sound is just a variance of vibration. So your name, Garrett, actually means, for me, it means a crystal. And it actually translates by sound to a crystal, which also means for, you know, for any guests or anyone that we've got listening, that you know, works, let's say they're born in India, or they may be born in China or Japan and they have an Oriental name, we don't have, and we can't, you obviously, if you go to the website, you won't actually be able to put in the Japanese or Chinese characters of your name. But if you spell your name phonetically, the way that it sounds when you say it, you'll get the right result. So for a lot of people, when they become familiar with the tools on the website, they even change the spelling of their name so that it looks more like it sounds. Garrett is a really easy name to work with because it's basically spelled the same way that it actually sounds. And by putting that in, just even your first name, we can find out three principal crystals that sort of govern you for this lifetime. And without revealing too much to the people that are out there, what we end up with is a purpose crystal for you. And for you, that crystal or your purpose crystal is actually black tourmaline. And black tourmaline is a crystal of protection principally. Not the sort of protection whereby you run around trying to protect yourself all the time, but more a crystal of confidence, more a crystal of understanding yourself to be a light force. And having the confidence, you know, to really be the real image of true protection, which is such a love, such a confidence for self and a power within self, that you don't need to buy into the illusions of the world that, you know, the whole universe is out to get you type scenario. Now, that means that you're on the earth today, according to this system, to actually be a beacon of that message to the rest of the world. And when you do achieve that, you actually will move to your higher purpose crystal, which is charite. And charite is a crystal of individualization. And we'll talk about here in a minute, but what we will look at first is that if and when you're trying to embrace, you know, your black tourmaline message, this principle of, you know, inner love and trying to be that essence and show other people particularly how to do that and have that confidence in their life force, what generally happens in the world is we get dragged off into the shadows of the world. And your shadow, Gary, is actually amber. And amber is the crystal of laughter. Now, because it's your shadow, it does mean that, you know, you have a tendency, if you don't look after yourself, to fall into depression. But the worst thing that someone that has amber as a shadow can possibly allow to happen is that they actually use their laughter almost like a wall. So if you are offended, you know, you may have a habit to actually laugh and then walk away and sort of go, right, I'll kill you later type stuff, you know. And what that does is it sort of drags you down, you know, and you're using your laughter as a cover, you know, just so you don't have to fully face up to the situation and really look at it. For you, that sort of thing, the laughter aspect, is something you need to really watch in this lifetime. You know, if you're not happy about something, then you shouldn't be happy, you know, and you should let people know that you're not happy. And I think you've probably, you know, going on what you now do, and you bring, you know, people like myself to others so that they can grow and learn new things. You've probably overcome that shadow, but I dare say, you know, it's something that you very easily fall back into. We all do.
You're and very right. You're, you know, you're absolutely on it.
Yeah. And it's just the need to make everybody feel like they're needed, the need to make everybody feel special. And if someone's going to tell someone that, you know, they're an asshole, it's not going to be you, you know?
That's exactly it.
Where this sort of goes. Yeah. So that's your shadow side, and you should be able to see how your shadow side is overcome by your purpose, you know, which is, of course, the purpose being protection, which is becoming a beacon of light. So that even if someone questions you, they look within your eyes and they see such a bright, shining soul that they think, well, there's no point in me calling him an idiot, because if I do, I know it's just going to fall straight off his back. Nobody's going to annoy him. I'm just going to let him know that, look, I think he's awesome. And what then happens is they become the ones that are laughing and actually fix it themselves, you know. When you become really, really good with protection, with the self-love thing, building all of that up, and you move into your higher purpose, charite is the stone of individualization. It's one of the most powerful stones on the earth today. It's a stone of dreams. It's a stone of not just dreams as in, you know, living dream, but also actually, you know, the real dream stuff. It means you get a lot of messages in dreams. They're always very specific. But what charite tend to do is they have a set gift, a thing that nobody else on the earth, for example, does, and you're waiting for that to shine. So when you step into your higher purpose, sometimes it must feel like, you know, you're just around the corner from something that's so special that if you just touch it, the whole world's going to be a different place. And so you get really, really close to that, but the moment you get too close, it becomes very, very scary that, you know, your whole life is going to change if you touch this thing. So it's a little bit like living somewhere and knowing that the most amazing you is just around the corner. But if you embody that, the whole world's going to change because of it. So you tend to just slip back into laughing and back into the shadow, but then jump into your purpose and say, right, well, I am what I am, and I'm going to stand as that. So that's an example of how those three crystals sort of play out in your life. And remembering, you know, it's very, I guess, Charite is a very spiritual stone. You know, it's way, way up there on the tree of life, in the second sphere on the tree of life, which, you know, for people that aren't familiar with the tree, that basically that top sphere, that number one sphere, if you like, right at the top, is basically unity consciousness. And the moment we step down from that to two and then to three, which forms the top triangle up the top there, you're basically stepping from unity consciousness straight out of there into the divine masculine, which, of course, I'm sure you describe yourself often as, Garrett, but you are the divine masculine as Charite. And the divine masculine as Charite is decisive, direct, you know, you as your higher purpose. When you fall into that, people just stop and they listen, you know, and that's the you should be walking around the world as more and more and more and more. So, you know, what we would do for you, the liquid crystals, is we would actually feed you your shadow as amber. We would feed you black tourmaline on day two. And on day three, Charite, and over 21 days, you're basically facing your shadow, seeing your purpose, and glimpsing that higher purpose. And hopefully on day 22, you step into that higher purpose that you actually represent. But that, you know, that's one goal, and that's free on the site. You know, for anyone that wants to go on there and have a little play around, you know, there's all sorts of toys. And that's just using your first name. And, you know, I think we're probably better to avoid the other one, which is where you put in all your birth date and all the rest of the stuff. We'll probably run out of time if we start playing with it. But there's another one on there that is your life path. And that basically, for you at the moment, you would be in City 4, which again is the fourth sphere on the tree of life, which is an emotional sphere. It means that at this time in your life, if you wanted a quick overview, at this time in your life, and you've been doing this since you turned 43, you are learning about unconditional love. And it should be the most pressing issue for you in your life today. And things that are working with you or should be appearing for you is the need to curb judgment, the need to understand unity, the need to understand love for what it really is in the spiritual sense. And as well as that, matching, as a man, matching your feminine side to your input and output of vibration, which sounds kind of silly, but a lot of men fail to actually output the feminine. When they experience feminine energy, they tend to drink of it and put it inside themselves, and they can conduct themselves in a feminine way. But then the masculine falls away as they do that. You know, the two are supposed to unify and stand strong with each other. It's, you know, I guess for you at the moment, it's a dance of masculine, feminine energy and trying to actually stand as one or the other. And what I'm saying to you is you're supposed to be a pillar of strength that holds both at once. It's all about spiritual emotion, which is movement and change, you know. And for the next probably, well, you're going to be in that space for about 4 years, so 43 to 47 odd, this is you, you know, you're going to be going through that in your life. And what we would do for people when we know what city they're working through or what set of seven crystals they're working with, we put those in a set of seven sequence, and you can take them in a broader sequence of seven, you know, and each day then becomes a lesson, you know, and it's a very different thing. Sound familiar at all?
Oh my gosh. We're out of time. We haven't even scratched the surface, Justin. And I want to keep you here for like an 82-hour marathon and not have anybody hang up. I want to talk to you offline, so I will tell you that. So if people want to either buy your products or find out more, what is the best thing for them to do today? What do you recommend?
Look, in all honesty, the website has a lot of information on it. There's so much stuff on there. you can be lost on there literally for days and days, you know. And there's things on there, you know, we've actually plotted the days of the week and of the year over the top of the crystalline cycle. So every day is actually resonating with a set frequency, you know. So as people, we're trying to return to our wholeness by abiding by, you know, every day embracing a different frequency or a different view of the world. So the Earth is doing the same thing. The Earth resonates to a certain frequency every day. So on the website and, of course, on Facebook, on our Liquid Crystal page, you can go on there. We've always got a crystal of the day up. That crystal represents the Earth's frequency on that day. All of the lessons aligned with that crystal are things you guys should be experiencing, you know, in that aspect. And particularly for you guys, you know, in the States over there, you know, you guys in the US, you represent the voice chakra for the world. And whether you know it or not, what that means is most of the lessons around the USA and about, you know, about the States for you guys is up there in the throat. You know, it's about communication. It's about doing all of those aspects related to that. So when you're looking at these crystals, you know, and they're coming up day in, day out, you know, today is the day of diamond, for example, which is the crystal of light body. The animal totem for that is the humpback whale. The essential oil is neroli, you know. We go so far, we can even tell you what star that actually aligns to in the night sky, you know. So this thing's become so holistic now that, you know, it's quite incredible. And, you know, you see people's fascination with dolphins and whales and things like that. It's become so holistic. You know, I'm releasing, I think, probably in about 4 weeks, I'm releasing a DVD on working with dolphins and whales and all of what we call the Nantakuba, which are basically the great teachers of our oceans. That contains all of the lessons of working with those beings, how to connect with them. It teaches you the star systems that those beings are connected to, all of that way out there stuff. But then at the same time, locks it down and makes it really, really real. So the real answer to your question, Garrett, is you can look us up on Facebook. You can go to the website and be lost for hours. You can get hold of a Liquid Crystal Oracle, which I believe Llewellyn are actually distributing over there in the States. In fact, they might have sold out. I know we sent a whole heap of them over there, and they were just blown away by how fast it disappeared off the shelves.
Wow.
But if you are someone that works with crystals and you're listening to this today, you know, and you don't have a copy of the Liquid Crystal Oracle, it's the future of crystals, you know. And I have no qualms in saying that. You know, I can honestly just say to you, if you don't have that yet and you're working with crystals, you're letting yourself down and your clients too, you know. It's a very, very holistic, very, very big work on crystals. And, huge. The Oracle itself, the Liquid Crystal Oracle, you know, it would probably interest some of you to know that I drew all of the images from the cover to everything. I'm not an artist. I still have no idea how I operated. I did it all on a computer, and I drew all of the images on a computer-based program, in fact, on 6 different programs, and then merged them together. I'm still someone that has trouble finding my emails on the computer, so I don't actually know how I did that. All of those things, you know, there's an element of divinity in everything we do, but the Oracle itself, I think, is probably a really good starting point for so many people that just want to see what it's really all about. A small warning, though, with me, there's no bullshit. So, you know, when you read the Oracle and you look at my work, don't expect, you know, peace, love, and mundanes from me. You know, it's exact, and I put things in that are genuinely right there on the edge. You know, if someone wants to play with them, you've got to really be careful. So if I say in the Oracle, which I do on some trinities of crystals and in some topics, be really careful. Be really careful. You know, it's I'm not someone to leave something out. So they're probably the best ways to get hold of what we do and to have a look. I'm hoping to come over to the States sometime this year or probably early next year. We'll just see how it pans out. I've got Llewellyn chasing me up at the moment to try and come over there and do some lectures for them and some bits and pieces related to the Oracle. So, you never know. It could be just down the road. I've heard there's some waves there, Garrett. I'm coming.
I would love it. I'd love it. And I'm asking you publicly so everybody can hear me ask you. I would love to have you come back. We'll have to work out dates, you know, down the road, but I'd love to have you come back and scratch the surface part two and just start diving more into this and taking more of listeners' calls and questions, because this is just now completely fascinating to me. And I didn't know where today was going, to be quite honest. I just knew it was going to be fun, and now I'm just so intrigued and blown away, and I have Mary Lou to thank for making the introduction. But, Justin, our time's up. Any real quick last words of wisdom for anybody before we let you go today?
Look, I think probably the wisest thing that I could throw out there is that if you're out there and you're looking spiritually at yourself and you're doing all of the things that you possibly can to grow, to change, to love and to make the world a better place, to remember, you know, and absolutely as a surfer, remember, you know, this is straight from the ocean to you. Remember that big waves and going out there in the world and making big waves break. And when they do, they basically leave us, you know. There's nothing special about a giant wave, but there's really special things about the tiny ripples that we create, because they grow to become big waves. So don't doubt yourself and what you're actually doing. Stay confident in the small things. Take everything as tiny, tiny, tiny little things around you. They are each and individually just so much more important than the bigger whole. And let everything mean something, you know. Don't think the things that are happening to you are the end of the world, and ignore the big things. Let the big things pass. It's the little things that are really, really important, you know. And also, you know, always in surfing, you know, we watch. You know, I sat this morning, I brought up all the weather maps from around the world, and I'm looking for these tiny little birthplaces of swell, you know, miles and miles away, where tiny waves are going to grow to this beautiful big swell, you know. And the further that moves, the more beautiful it'll become. So every one of our listeners out there, you know, including you, Garrett, of course, are creating those tiny ripples which will become the tidal waves, you know, of consciousness that we need to change this planet. So just, I think so many people say we're in a bad way and the whole world is, you know, doing the wrong thing. I don't buy into that at all. I believe each one of us is pulling our weight right now, and sometimes we get a little bit lost on parts of the journey. So if we all know that we're doing our part, stay confident in that, and, you know, I guess, love a lot of people a little, don't love a single person a lot, you know, and that's really a message that I've worked with a lot. You know, I think people need to share the love a little bit more, and, you know, it's great if you love someone and if you're willing to sit with that person or even with that small group of people and love them, but the real world changes when we love lots of people, just a tiny little piece, you know.
I love that.
It's crazy.
There we go. Everybody, it's been... Justin, can you say your... can you do your last name, Justin? It's so pretty, and I'm going to screw it up. Justin Moikiha Asar.
Justin Moikiha Asar. Yeah.
That's pretty good. So much better.
That was right.
We'll just have to have you back so I can practice again. Thank you very, very much. Everybody, we're going to be live tomorrow night with Stephen Fields. He is the star of the L.A. play right now, Confessions of a Mormon Boy. And Justin, thank you very much. And everybody, don't drive distracted. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.
Thank you.